This is Brother Bedford, and welcome to Conversations with Black Millionaires.
Dr. Jackie Mayfield is one of the most accomplished black men in the world. He is a self-made millionaire and the co-founder of ComproTax, Inc., which is the nation's largest black-owned income tax preparation bookkeeping service. Dr. Mayfield is one of the foremost advocates of business ownership in black America. Now, being a child of the civil rights movement, he made a lifetime commitment to self-empowerment for people. And today, he is nationally known as the entrepreneur's bookkeeper and income tax preparer. He's also nationally known as an empowerment specialist, teaching, training, and helping and inspiring and established entrepreneurs to achieve greater levels of success in the business world. And he does that directly and indirectly. Now, too often those who take care of the finances of entrepreneurs are truly not entrepreneurs. But Mr. Mayfield isn't only a successful businessman, he's also helped make hundreds of others successful in their endeavors as well. He combines superior knowledge of the tax code, bookkeeping procedures, and the ways of business to make sure they are also financially sound and protected. Now, unable to finish high school, Mr. Mayfield went on to become one of the nation's most noted entrepreneurs, building ComproTax, along with others, into a multi-million dollar business with more than 220 franchise offices nationwide. Now, there are just dozens of awards and accolades that we can go over, but that would eat into the time of this conversation, and I am anxious to question Mr. Mayfield on some things that I know that would be very helpful to all of us budding and seasoned entrepreneurs as we try to take advantage of a time period that Mr. Mayfield speaks about so often. We'll ask him about this time period, but it's a very exciting time if you truly want to be an entrepreneur. And so without further delay, I'd like to welcome to the call the co-founder of ComproTax, Inc., Dr. Jackie Mayfield. Thank you for being on the call today, Dr. Mayfield.
Thank you, Brother Bedford. I'm excited to be here myself. I'm not used to the vacillation of the cold weather coming to the south as it has in the last few weeks. So if my voice sounds a little graveled or even a little tired, then that's the reason. But I am definitely excited about sharing some things tonight, and hopefully we can make it a very good interaction tonight for the people that are listening.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mayfield. I really appreciate it. So before we get started, as we get started, I'd like to start off by asking you, I mean, I've read some of the things from your bio, but, I mean, you've been doing this for so long. You've gone through many of the time periods, economic hardships such as we are facing today, maybe not as severe as today, but you've gone through the ups and downs of the economy, and you have a wealth of experience. I want to ask you first, how did you get your start as an entrepreneur?
Well, ironically enough, I was sort of forced into becoming an entrepreneur. I left high school to join the civil rights movement in the year of 1963. Mm-hmm. And after doing that, I was very, very committed to freedom at that time, even as a young fellow. Of course, I didn't have anyone tell me not to do that because my mother had died at age 33, had nine siblings, and my grandparents who raised me brought in the other eight. And, of course, we certainly experienced what poverty is like, but we didn't know we were poor. Poor. You know, it was poor when you don't have no money.
Right.
During the time, it's a sort of a elongated answer, but it makes the point that in participating in the civil rights movement, I found myself not being able to get a job for various reasons, and a lot of my friends did not make it. They were either dead or in prison. Mm. So I was committed based on a raising from my grandfather, who I am in awe of even today, that told me I could be anything that I wanted to be, and I had the audacity to believe that. So I didn't let racism nor the lack of money stop me from going into business. Mm-hmm. So I went into business after the Civil Rights Movement as a mechanic. Mm-hmm. And I did that before I learned to drive a car, because I learned to fix automatic transmissions. And by the time I was age 24, I had built a very sizable business and owned my first home and bought my first new car.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran into some obstacles there in that I outgrew the business I needed to expand, so I couldn't get any money
mm-hmm.
at that time. So I went into the insurance business. And going into the insurance business, I went into the, not as a debit or the kind that you would think you would go into during that era. I went into selling life insurance for planning estates so we would inherit poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And I built a, and I'm sorry to give you short answers, but I built a business of entrepreneurship as insurance salesman and started as a field representative in 1973 and worked my way into state directorship by 1979 and then became an area vice president over three states and had built a very large sales force. And then we went into the tax business that I founded and thought of during that time in order to really solicit more prospects for insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea that it would grow into what it has become today. And so we started, and the rest is history. But we started in 1982, and during that time, we have similar economic times like mm-hmm. today compared to that time. That's why I tell people all the time that it's best to start a business and be committed, because you can write your own check, your own future, but it requires commitment and sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever bad times are about, even during the Depression, you didn't have 30% unemployment. So even if you had 30% unemployment, 70% of the folks are still working. And as an entrepreneur, you sell to the 70%.
Mm-hmm.
And you market to the 70%. And then you then can write your own check.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned some, you alluded to some of the challenges that you had starting. What specific problems or issues did you face as you were beginning ComproTax during, I guess, 82? That would be during the time Reaganomics, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, so what will be some of the problems that you faced that probably parallel today that you had to overcome during that time period?
Well, first of all, lack of money.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't get loans. And all businesses start with the money you save or the money you possibly get from friends and family. And since I didn't have nothing but probably broke friends, I couldn't get no money there.
Mm-hmm.
So when you pick up your bed and begin to walk and have the belief that you can achieve,
mm-hmm.
then you don't let obstacles stop you. So I can only look back at the time and say that I really didn't have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
As you began to grow and develop, you know, problems and this comes about that you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But the greatest thing that happened to us, and that is Yusuf Muhammad and Craig Johnson and myself, is we were committed to staying together. And although we are not monolithic in our thinking, we complement each other in our diverse thoughts. And although we can disagree with certain things, we don't fall out or become disagreeable. And we've been together for over 30 years in business together.
Now, that's key. Now what would you say was the contributing factor, or was there some type of agreement that you all made at the beginning of your partnership? Because today I get a lot of questions, and a lot of individuals that I try to counsel, they find it very difficult to forge partnerships with one, obviously friends or family, but just forge partnerships to build a sustainable business over the long haul. So what is it that you all did? What made that formula work? Was it an agreement from the very beginning, or was it something that the chemistry just worked?
Well, it was basically chemistry. Plus, I believe in the philosophy of the African Akan philosophy, whereas if you recognize that you're here for a reason, and that God will send people in your pathway, you need to recognize those that God sent and those that God wants you to stay away from.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Yusuf and Craig was recruited by me in the insurance business, and we developed a relationship at that point. And I, although I've gone through thousands of people, they had that commitment to be a team.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the commitment to try to solve problems that we see within the black community. I know it's not fashionable for us to make a business model out of doing good for black folk.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to have the commitment that regardless of how bad you may be treated by your brothers and sisters, you must remain and can be committed to loving them in spite of.
Right.
We made that commitment that we know that most black folk are suffering from a psychological deficit that they did not have of their own choosing, that they have a dislike for themselves, and of course they become antithetical to themselves. They also become destructive to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But for us to really make it as a people, and the only thing that really matters in life is to have something so big in life that you are reduced to nothing because of it is bigger than you. And our commitment to trying to help solve the problems we see within the black community was second to none. And we feel like that economics is one of those key, although psychological slavery got to be dealt with, and solving the problem that are symptoms, as Dr. Robinson so eloquently put all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it takes money to fight a war.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have money, it's like not having bullets.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to fight a war and you have no bullets, then all of that is just vain rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
So not speaking in terms of bullets to kill people, but I'm using that as a metaphor that money can provide health care for yourself and your people.
Mm-hmm.
Money can provide education for yourself and your people.
Mm-hmm.
Money can provide all the necessities that comes with being self-determined.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that a lot of our brothers and sisters who supposedly fight in the movement or participate in the movement who are supposedly conscious are almost as anti-money.
Right.
And you cannot succeed being anti-money.
Right.
Money is not evil in itself. People who use it are evil or they are good.
Mm-hmm.
If you're good, you do good things with the money.
Mm-hmm.
If you're bad, you're going to do bad things with money.
Right.
Money itself does not have a conscience or a spirit.
Mm-hmm.
It's used by people who have those, whether it's negative or positive.
Yeah. And that reminds me of, I guess, what our mutual friend George Frazier always says, after all of our pontification, we still have to be able to write a check.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's great.
Put it out.
That's great. Now, you mentioned something. What is that trait or that characteristic that you would describe that you've developed or that you've built over this period of time that would allow you to look at the big picture like that? And also, do you think that that trait or that characteristic is a must for us as entrepreneurs or startup entrepreneurs today to possess?
First of all, you can't be motivated by money.
Mm-hmm.
Money is a tool, as I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
The cause behind your product or service got to be bigger than anything else, because you're going to need that to carry you through the hard times.
Mm-hmm.
And be put in a position where you're ready to quit. You can come to a position where you can't go forward or go back or go sideways. You just stand only for a while until the storm lifts itself, then you move forward. But never entertain quitting.
Perseverance,
without a doubt, but a ardent commitment. I mean, a burning desire that can't be put out with no kind of water.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that fire is burning when you sleep. That fire is burning when you're actively involved in your business. And you also have to have the love of people.
Mm-hmm.
You have to truly love people, because you got to forgive their transgressions against you as you move forward. Because if you spend time dealing with all of the transgressions against you, you'll never really move forward with warp speed.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I never heard it framed like that, that if you're dealing with all of the transgressions against you, I guess you don't pick up any momentum, and that's absolutely necessary to build a business.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And the business has to, again, it must be a service or a product that people need or you believe they need.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're the one that's really going to make it happen. But if it's just about money, I don't know anyone that's successful making it all about the money.
Right.
But the money is necessary for you to do good.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned earlier about cause. Would you say that if a person is to start up their business now, they should possibly even put cause first? I know a lot of people going into the opportunity market, but they don't stick. And I think it coincides with what you're saying, that the desire is not there. So should they have a cause that possibly lines up with their strengths and their passions, which would give them that type of desire to keep going through all of the obstacles?
Without a doubt. There are many opportunities, and the difference between people who make it and those who don't make it is very simple. Simply put, someone who's cause driven, but does not have to have it their way. For example, if there's an opportunity out here, you want to look at what is behind not only the product and service, but who are the people behind it and what would they do with the money?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can help a company become extremely successful only to find out that the money you helped them to build is used against your people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I try to be mindful of myself, is that we have to jump on a train in order to try to help that train catch up. But if you are jumping on the faster train because they have used, through the annals of history, free labor or slavery and other things that have hurt us,
mm-hmm.
and you look at another company and say, well, they're doing everything right, and this black company here is they're not doing so well. You got to look at the message behind it and the heart and see what you can do to help them do better.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're always helping the man, quote unquote, to do mm-hmm. better, then you are always fighting an enemy that have your bullets that you gave them to fight you with.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly to answer your question, there must be a cause, but the cause must be righteous. It can't be just a cause. Say, I want to make some money because I want to get a ride.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get a house. Or I want to have a lot of jewelry. Or I want to just live large. That's a cause in itself, but it may not be a righteous cause.
Right. So it should all, I guess, going back to your earlier statement, then it should be something that truly lines up with, I guess, the struggle or the progressive movement of, I guess, on a broader picture, you could say humanity. But if we narrow it down, if we're speaking about our people, you would say it's something that lines up with advancing in the struggle and moving our people forward.
Without a doubt. You also have to be committed to learning about who you are prior to your slavery experience.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to the regression of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go back when Africa was the zenith, it was the pinnacle of all of humanity and all of the success and civilization. And you got to know that you came from that era,
mm-hmm.
so that you didn't start in slavery. Slavery is only a chapter in the book that you're part of, and it's only a small chapter.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't talk about the empires, the great empires of Songhai and of the Ghanaian Empire and the Egyptian Empire and all of the great empires that had tremendous wealth. Can't talk about them and you just accept poverty.
Right.
Got to bring it into today and say, I can have an empire or we can have an empire because I is only a component part of the we.
Mm-hmm.
I can never do nothing by themselves. And that's what's happening to a lot of the dictators who are finding themselves in the uprising of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you begin to do everything for the people, then the people love you and they don't uprise. And I don't care how much fear you put on folk to keep them in line, that's only a temporary solution.
Mm-hmm. Now, what I'm hearing, I've heard you speak on this before, and maybe you can expound on it more, because I guess what you're speaking of is developing some form of culture of entrepreneurship, where this is pretty much ingrained in our family culture, our educational institutions. So could you expound on it? I've heard you use that term before, the culture of entrepreneurship.
Right,
is that kind of like what you're speaking of?
Let me talk about the culture that we can recognize.
Okay.
We have a culture of education.
Mm-hmm.
Those of us who are maybe past 40, we can look back into our families, and even when there was no money, there were people who saved and sacrificed and worked 3 and 4 jobs in under extreme conditions in order to get the money for you to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe that education was a way out.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that whatever it took, although our mothers and fathers and grandparents might not have had it, but they wanted you to have it.
Mm-hmm.
Because their whole cause, that cause again, for living was for you to do better.
Right.
All right, now, you look at the Asian community, be it the Koreans or the Chinese people, and most other cultures, they have a culture of business in that they raise their children to work in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have a choice. Just like in education, you didn't have a choice at one time or another whether you're going to go to college or not.
Right.
I mean, that was something you're going to have to do.
Right.
Or leave the house and don't come back.
Right.
So what I'm saying is we have to develop a culture of business so that our children see that they can succeed in the business. And we also got to support these businesses and our children see that we support them and not talk about them.
Right.
Because you can always find some bad in a business.
Right.
Especially a black business, because they're starting at a deficit.
Right.
But white businesses didn't start in a perfect condition. They started shabbily.
Right.
And a lot of us helped them to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
And got the money, and now, you know, it's like a well-oiled machine in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to lull us enough to be able to sacrifice the imperfections of us to get us to that next level.
Mm. That's profound. That's profound. At the start, you mentioned, and again, I've heard you use this term before, but at the start, you mentioned the type of economy that we're in and how this is a prime time for entrepreneurs. So could you expound on this being the entrepreneurial economy or the time of the entrepreneur?
Yes. Well, a lot of our great minds have been lulled to sleep because they have this so-called good job.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the creator sends bad times in order to expose your greatness. You would have never known. I would have never known I could do what I'm able to do now had not it been for bad times. But it exposed my greatness, and that's not a bragging. It's just that every one of us have greatness, but we have to believe that we do have, because we're made in the image of God, and that exposure will allow you to do anything, because I believe the image of God is a concept of creation.
Mm-hmm.
Just like God spoke everything into existence, from the mind of God came the universe.
Mm-hmm.
As a thought and as a word. Well, we have the power of words the same way, because we're made in that image. The computer and what we're doing now, that technology did not exist.
Right.
100 years ago, but out of the mind of man that's made in the image of God came that creation.
Mm-hmm.
And it evolved and evolved and evolved. So the thing we must do is be willing to expose our greatness. And sometimes we go through this life because we want it easy, but there's no easy way out. And what you think may be a curse actually is a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to take it as such and move forward. Because when my mama died at age 33,
mm-hmm.
I was about 7 years old, and it was about, you know, it was 9 of us, I think 7 or 8. I was 9, and it was 9 children. And I'm the 3rd oldest in the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And then my grandmother, who and my grandfather raised me, we were very, very poor and poor, you know, use the right term. So going through the civil rights movement, I just up as a star student, just quit school.
Mm.
So joined a movement because something led me spiritually in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I thought, after a while of going through this for 3-4 years, not being able to get a job or even go to school, I got married at age 17 and a half.
Wow.
And I'm still married to the same lady.
Beautiful.
For 45 years. So I've been committed to stand the course, and that's what you have to do regardless of what happens in life. You have to be committed to stand the course and let the Creator, with all of his angels that come your way, guide you along the pathway.
Mm-hmm.
Bad times are good times, because that's a way of renewing your spirit.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That is great. Now, you mentioned earlier, you start, you spoke about your insurance sales. Again, our mutual friend George, I remember in his start, he started in sales, door-to-door sales. How critical is that skill in starting your business or just embracing the philosophy of being good at sales or communications? How important is that for today's entrepreneurs?
It's extremely important. Matter of fact, out of all the factors, it probably weighs the heaviest because in order to move yourself or to move a product or service, you have to be able to sell. And what stops people from selling is fear. And in Matthew 25, verse 14 through 30, deals with the parable of the talents, and it's talking about sales. It's talking about how the Lord look at folk who don't sell. And he's not well pleased.
Right.
So if you can't sell or won't sell, you better find you a salesman in the scheme of your business, or else it won't make it. But I think that we should erect a statue in every town square with a man and a woman with a briefcase and say, here lies the salesperson that keeps the economy going everywhere.
Right.
Without the salesperson, you won't have a job.
Right.
And they're the ones that make the most money. So what stops people from selling is that fear. You got folk afraid to talk to folk as if everybody going to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
You ever been in a situation when, you walk in a room and you speak to the person. The person is so happy because they can't speak first. But you break the ice and a conversation starts.
Right, right. Yes.
And you have to have the ability to walk in a room and a glow comes about you and light it up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about having the presence of the Creator with you.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Now, what would be the first steps to acquiring that type of presence or that type of, I don't want to call it charisma, but just I guess presence is the right word when you walk into a room. What is the first step to getting that type of magnetism?
Well, what you have to do is take yourself through a ritual and to be humble. I said that I want to be able to speak to athletes who are multimillionaires,
mm-hmm.
who are very talented. God has blessed them. They get a lot of money, but they really have no self-worth that they have acquired themselves. And let's say, for example, if you can strip a person of all their talents, of all of their material things, of all of their money, everything, here they lie naked, metaphorically.
Mm-hmm.
And then ask them, what do you feel about yourself? Now, if they can't still be excited about themselves, then they got work to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got to be excited just for the mere fact that you are sent here by God for a purpose and that you are very excited about being here. And you got to realize that your essence, without clothes, without any material trappings, cars, houses,
mm-hmm.
still somebody special. And if you can get that, then you got it made.
So being able to acknowledge that without all of the knowing that you're a sports figure or just being happy without saying how fast you can run or how high you can jump, still being happy with yourself.
Like, for example, not just a sports figure.
Mm-hmm.
You have people that dress up, and they can only feel good about themselves when they do dress up.
Right.
They ride in a car that they can't really hardly afford because that makes them feel good about who they are.
Mm-hmm.
They have been legitimized by external things, They don't have intrinsic value about themselves. All of it is extrinsic.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get this extrinsic value about yourself regardless of what it is, because all of those things you can lose.
Right.
But if you feel good about yourself regardless, then you are a whole person.
Thank you for listening to my conversations with Black millionaire entrepreneurs. And if you want more tips, more strategies, more notifications that would really take you into the mindset of these brilliant Black millionaire entrepreneurs, I need you to take out your phone and text my brother, that's the key word, my brother, to 58885. Just text the keyword, my brother, to 58885. Or if you prefer, you can go online and just go to blackmillionairemindset.com. And once you enter your name and your email, I will immediately send you my video training, 10 Keys to Unlock Your Own Millionaire Mindset. So again, you can go to blackmillionairemindset.com, enter your name and email, and I'll send you the video training, or you can text the keyword, my brother, to 58885, and I'll make sure that you get the video training. This is your brother Bedford, and I look forward to seeing you and hearing from you in the next Conversations with Black Millionaire Entrepreneurs. Take care.